Well, welcome. My name is Anthony. I am the care pastor here at Hoboken Grace. We are in week four of a series called In Real Life. You know, sometimes we can look at scripture and we can think to ourselves, how does this work in today's world? You see, in Jesus had a powerful way of using physical realities. We're talking about earthly stories to help us to understand who God is and how he works and to understand his kingdom. And some of you are on this journey right now with us and you're still trying to figure out who God is. And see, what we're exploring in this series is Jesus's teaching using parables. See, parables are stories that allowed you to see what maybe you otherwise couldn't see. And so for the next few weeks, we're diving into those stories, and we've been walking through some really incredible parables of Jesus and to look on how we can better understand who he is and our relationship with him and this relationship that we get to have with him. So if you're just joining us, I want to encourage you, go back and listen because it's been really powerful so far. And so we're exploring that Jesus told parables that are among some of the best known and most influential stories in the world. And we introduced last week this question that we should be asking for each parable, right? And it's this: how did Jesus seek to change the attitude and behaviors with this parable? Because listen, parables are for today. They're for the here and now. They're directed for life here on earth. So how do we use these parables to instruct and to guide us in life today? Well, we know it's important to read it. We know it's important to listen to it. And we know it's important to reflect on what the intent is. Last week, we looked at the parable of the vineyard owner and the workers. And we looked at this remarkable truth, how we can combat bitterness and anger and jealousy in our lives with gratitude. And some of you looked at last week's parable and saw all the different pay that the different owners and the owner gave to the different workers, and you said to yourself, well, that's not fair. The vineyard owner shouldn't have paid the workers the exact same amount, right? I mean, they did all the work. They all did different work. They shouldn't have been paid the same, right? That's not fair. I mean, that's a phrase that we've probably all said in one way, shape, or form, right? That's not fair, right? It happens in sports all the time. Some of you remember this, right? In 2019, last year, right? If you're looking at the NFC Championship, right? Late in the fourth quarter with the game tied at 20, Rams cornerback committed this obvious pass interference play where he hit the Saints receiver as he went up for a catch, and the penalty was never called. It resulted in 4th and 10, and the Saints kicked a field goal to go up 3, but if the penalty had been called, it would have been 1st and 10 and giving the Saints a chance to go and score a touchdown, right? Instead, the Rams, they kicked a game-tying field goal and won overtime and went on, you know, to the Super Bowl. And then later, the NFL admitted that it should have been a penalty, leading to this new pass interference rules that are still more confusing than ever. But anyone who watched the game, I'm a Broncos fan, but I screamed at that television, that's not fair. And you know what? The truth is this. The truth is that life is not fair. Yeah, we know this, right? But there is something in all of us that wants life to be fair some of the time. I got to make a confession. I love pie. I do. I'm a big fan of pie. I'm doing this diet thing right now, and pie is not exactly on it anywhere, and I hate it because I love pie. Strawberry rhubarb, banana cream, I'm a big fan of them all, right? And maybe you can relate to this, but I am really only concerned about fairness when my piece of the pie is the smallest piece of pie. Think about it. When I get a larger piece of the pie, I could care less about fair. I just say, God, thank you for all the good things in my life. I've got a big piece of pie. I mean, think about it, right? Think about maybe there's an opportunity at work, right? There are a couple of people that are competing for that one position or that one sale or to get with that one client that everyone wants to work with, right? And everybody wants to work with that client, and there are other people that are competing for that special account, and if you get that account, you get to go home to your family or to your roommate, or you call your parents and you say, you know what? God answered my prayer. God is great, right? You never gather the family around the table or call your parents or tell your roommate, listen, life is so unfair. 4 of us wanted it and I got it. How unfair for the other 3 people. But somewhere else in the city, there are three families who are sitting around the table going, you know, I can't believe life is so unfair. Why didn't I get that? I prayed. I worked hard. You see, I confess that sometimes I'm really only concerned about a lack of fairness when I'm on the short end of the stick. When things are going my way, hey, I don't even think about fair. Now, I think we're all kind of that way sometimes, because this, when we say life is not fair or things are not fair, I think we're really saying that life isn't even. Life isn't even. Right? Life isn't even. life isn't even. And I think maybe we think that life should be even. But when you use the word even, you realize that's impossible. I mean, there's really no way for things to be even. There's no way for things to be that way. And here's why that's important. This unfairness, this unevenness, I think it quickly becomes an excuse for our irresponsibility. Right? The unfairness or the unevenness of life, something that we easily leverage. We can easily leverage it towards acting out, maybe even a little irresponsibly. Because after all, I got the short end of the stick, right? I didn't get a fair shake. I got the smallest piece of the pie. And it's not just true of people who get the short stick. This works on the other side as well. Because we've seen it in people, right? The people that get the larger piece of the pie, do you know what we do with extra stuff? We're irresponsible with it. I mean, the more money I make, the more money we waste, right? The more money you have, the more things you have, the more time you have, the more time you waste. The more of anything you have that you don't need, the more you waste. I think I'm only irresponsible with things, generally speaking, when I have extra of it. And if I'm not careful, I will use my extra. I will use the benefit. I will use that fact that I am successful and excuse that to be irresponsible. So I think the big, broad question is are we taking responsibility for what life has offered us? Because in connection with what we talked about last week in terms of gratitude, right? You know, are you not only thankful for what you have, but are you taking full responsibility? Are you using what you have and what life has offered you? Because the issue isn't how do we make life even. The issue isn't how we make life fair. The real question is, what am I going to do with the hand that I've been dealt? What am I going to do with the slice of pie that I've been handed? What am I going to do with the opportunity, that life that God has given me? I think that's really the issue. And the more you focus on the unfairness and the unevenness, the more we're going to be tempted to excuse being irresponsible because of what somebody else has or doesn't have. Now, I say all this stuff in the middle of our In Real Life series because, believe it or not, Jesus taught a parable on this very thing. Well, I didn't think about that, Anthony. Of course, I'm sure he probably did. So we're going to be looking at this in Matthew, right? We're going back to the Gospel of Matthew. We're going to be looking in Matthew chapter 25. And in this parable, he gives us a perspective, right? He gives us a perspective on the unevenness and kind of the unfairness of life. And so this parable, depending on which translation you use, is either called the bag of gold or the bag of talents. And sometimes I think when we use this phrase, the bag of talents, you think to yourself, oh, I can sing or I can dance, and it's something that comes naturally to me. It's a talent. Well, it's not that kind of talent, right? In this talent, it's a type of measurement, right? It's in this particular instance, it's a measure of money, and this is something that Jesus takes something very, what he does all the time, and what he does so graciously and so expertly is he takes something of the time, he takes something very cultural to the people who are reading this, and he teaches us a lesson about how God views this this kind of unevenness of life. And let me tell you about the end, really. Let me tell you about the end before we get there, because honest, some of you leave before the end, all right? So at the end of the parable, God doesn't try to fix the unevenness or the unfairness. God wants us to learn how to leverage it. So let's look at this parable together. All right, Matthew 25, and we're going to begin in verse 14. We're going to begin in verse 14, and it says this. So remember, we're right in the middle of a bunch of parables, actually, in chapter 25. So this little section begins with again, because he's in the middle of telling other parables, and so he kind of uses this particular parable to further make a point, okay? And so he says, again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. All right, so again, it will be like a man who goes on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. So much like we saw last week, right, with the vineyard owner, we have another wealthy landowner who's got some servants. And during this period, wealthy landowners often went on long journeys, right? You couldn't fly anywhere. So the quickest way to get somewhere was either on foot or carriage or horseback. And that wasn't necessarily quick, depending on where you were going. And so given the uncertainties of transportation during those days, the time of return, even for a well-planned trip, would be uncertain. So while they were gone, they would kind of delegate control and of the multiplication of their wealth to these trained accountants who actually could be servants. And these servants were kind of like managers, right? They were managers of the estate, and they could often earn money themselves and even buy property, right? Even though they worked for these wealthy landowners. And so the wealthy landowner is going on this journey. And he invites these three particular servants, trusted servants, right? And he decides to entrust them all with his wealth, everything he has. And you know, and this word entrust, right? This word entrust here means, you know, the master is going to split up his wealth among these servants, and he's expecting the servants to do something with his wealth, that if he were managing this on his own, he's not giving them this wealth to protect it or to guard it. He's giving them to manage the way a money manager maybe might manage somebody's wealth, right? So it continues in verse 15. To one he gave 5 bags of gold, to another 2 bags, and to another 1 bag, each according to his ability. And then he went on his journey. So a bag of gold, or talent, like we said in some translations, was about the equivalent to 20 years of work for an average day laborer in this culture. I mean, think about that, right? Think about what you make in 1 day, all right? Now, what do you make in a year? So multiply that by 20, and that's what we're dealing with here in terms of bags of gold. So 5 bags of gold would have been the equivalent of receiving pay for 100 years of work. 2 bags of gold would be the equivalent of receiving pay for 40 years of work. And even 1 bag of gold would be the equivalent of receiving pay for 20 years of work. Now, that wasn't even, right? He gave 1 5, he gave 1 2, he gave 1 1, and to which we say, well, wait a minute. That's not fair. That's not even. Well, he owns it, right? He can divvy it up however he wants, and that's how he decides to do it. So verse 16 goes on to say this way, the man who had received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 bags more. Think about that. If you had sufficient capital, you could invest it at a profit, right? And during this time, even if you were a servant, technically, to your master, you were able to invest. Now, remember, parables are illustrations, right? This didn't actually happen, but he is using something that the culture would have understood in order to make a point. So, for instance, during this period, you could lend to money changers who in turn would use it to turn a profit. So believe it or not, I was looking this up. They had interest rates during the time. They had actually, people were loaning money at interest rates. So this interest rate thing is not something that's new. It's been around since Roman rule, and it was kind of ridiculous. Believe it or not, I looked this up. The normal Roman rate for private loans was 12%. Some of you have credit cards at 12% interest, and you wonder why they call it a MasterCard. That's why. But during this time, most people didn't have extra money available for investment. And so if you did, you could reap a large profit. So why did the servant do this, right? Because he knew what the master was expecting of him. He said, I'm giving this to you to manage for me. So this guy goes out and does this thing with his wealth that he could envision his master doing. And some of you are like, can we learn more about that? You know, what did he do? How do I get five times the money back on my investment? Well, remember, this is a parable. Right, and to illustrate this parable, Jesus is using this to illustrate something. So I can't tell you exactly what his market situation is or his strategy. Right, so he continues in verse 17. So also the one with two bags of gold gained two more. So he goes out and he also doubles the guy's money as well. Okay, so Matthew 25, 18, it continues. But the man who had received one bag went out and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Some of you are like, what? Why would you do that? Well, truth be told, one of the safest and least profitable ways of protecting your money is to bury it in the ground. Believe it or not, such buried reserves are still occasionally found where someone never returned to retrieve his or her deposits. I mean, can you imagine that? You buy some land, you decide you're going to, you know, dig up the yard, put in a deck, a pool or something, and you find a bag of gold or a pearl of great price, believe it or not. Jesus also tells something on this, but that's a parable for another time. So this guy decides he's going to bury it. And at this point, I'm sure the people that Jesus is speaking to are like, why would anyone do that? No one would go out and dig a hole and put a bag of gold in it. I mean, even if you're just trying to keep the money safe, there are better ways to keep the money safe. So Jesus continues, right? Verse 19. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. And I can't really emphasize this enough, right? Right? You could probably say after a long, long time. So long that they're actually wondering if he's even going to come back. And interesting that he says they settled accounts. It meant he didn't expect them to bring back the gold and say, hey, we gartered your gold, you know. I know how much I gave you. So if I knew how much I gave you and you gave me that exact amount back, then we wouldn't need to settle an account, right? There's nothing to be settled. Settling accounts means that he wanted to see what they did with this gold, what he did with this talent, right? And because he expected them to manage his wealth the way he would have managed it. And he wanted to see what kind of return they got on his money. And so they came to settle the accounts. Verse 20 says it this way: the man who had received five bags of gold brought the other five. Master, he said, you entrusted me with five bags of gold. See, I have gained five more. I bet that guy couldn't wait for the master to come home. I bet you he ran up to him. Verse 21 says, his master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. He says, you were faithful with a few things. And a few, it's 100 years of pay. But anyway, you were faithful with a few things. And since you were faithful with a few things, I'm going to put you in charge of many. Great job. Come in and share your master's happiness. And he continues, the man with two bags of gold also came and said, Master, he said, you entrusted me with two bags of gold. See that I have gained two more. And his master replied in verse 23, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with the things, with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Wait. That's not fair. Because you see, the first guy, he had five that went to 10. And you put him in charge of many. And now this guy only went from 2 to 4 and you're going to put him in charge of many? That's not fair. Well, are you catching on to something yet? Let's see what happens to the third guy. So the men who had received one bag of gold came and said, Master, he said, I knew that you were a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. In other words, Master, you are tough. You are a difficult guy. You're intimidating. I was scared. I was afraid. In other words, technically, this is your fault. Now, the reason there is no more is because you frightened me so much that I couldn't give you any more, so I wanted to make sure that I didn't lose it. And some of you have read this before, and you got to this chapter, and you're like, okay, well, at least he gave the guy back what he had given him, right? I mean, the master should at least be okay with that. But look how the master responds in verse 26. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant, so you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well, that's not the response that I was hoping for. You wicked, lazy servant. In other words, the master is saying, you didn't go bury this money because of something you think about me. You went and buried this money because you're lazy. You went and buried the money because you didn't think it through. You just did the easiest thing. You took the easiest way out. And now that I'm back, you want to blame me for your own laziness. He says, if you knew that I'm that difficult to deal with, and that I'm looking for any kind of return I can get on my money, then you should have come up with a better plan than burying it. And look what happens, 27, 28. Well then, you should have put my money in the deposit with the banker so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. Wait a minute! That's not fair. That's not even. Well, is that the point? Shouldn't we give it to guy? Shouldn't we give it to the guy with the two, and then he'll have five? Because remember, he doubled, and then he will have like half. I mean, isn't that going to be fair? Give it to the guy who had 10 bags. What? Why would you do that? Well, he responds in verse 29. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So he gives what the servant who got one bag and buried it, he gives it to the one who has 10 bags. His point is this: everybody gets an uneven amount of opportunity, and everybody gets held accountable for what we do with it. And everybody has the privilege, and everybody has the responsibility to somehow, someday, we are going to give an account for what we did with our uneven amount of opportunity. And this opportunity that we've all been given. We've all been given different amounts of time. We've been given different amounts of things. We've been given different amounts of things. And God is trying to not make you look at that it's fair or unfair. Because you know what? At the end of the day, it's not even ours. It's on loan to us. And our responsibility is to figure out how to leverage it to its maximum. And you know what? There are some people. There are some people that have five bags of opportunity, and there are some people that have one bag of opportunity, and there are some people that have two bags of opportunity. And everybody listening to this message online or whether you're in person falls into one of these categories. Now, some of you And some people we know are like these five bag people, right? They got into the right schools. They're all related to the right people. They were extraordinarily talented, and their talented was recognized in the world of finance, art, music, entertainment. They married well. They got lucky. They got fortunate. They were the first one in, and when we look at them, they're smart. They're good looking. They're ridiculous. We hate them. It just seems to me that everything comes natural to them. And you work so hard, and you get ready for that presentation, and she wakes up late and walks in there and brushes her hair, and boom, she's just perfect. And there are people like this. And you know what happens with these five bag people if they're not careful? They can take it for granted. Because it's just easy. And you know, there are people that had to work their way through school. That maybe they had to go to junior college because they really couldn't afford to go to a big school. Things just didn't come as easy to them. Maybe they don't have as good a communication skills, and life was just a little bit tougher for them. And maybe they went through a tough relationship or something unplanned that just really rocked their world. And maybe you look at your life and you start comparing your life to other people, and you think to yourself, well, honestly, I may not have that much, but, or maybe you're saying things like, I don't have a lot going for me, especially compared to this person, or at least my life is not like that person. And then there are some of us that are kind of in between and somewhere in the middle. And the question for you is this, and the question for me is this: what are we going to do with what we have? What are we going to do? Not with what he has or what she has, what they have, but what we have. Because the tendency is to look at everybody else and look at what they do and look at what they don't do and the things that they have going for them or don't have going for them. And we make excuses for what we will or we won't do. And Jesus is saying, you are going to have to look at your bag, what you've been given, and decide, how do I leverage this to the fullest? How do I leverage what has been given me to the fullest? And refuse to either take it for granted because it comes so easy for you that you waste it, or excuse yourself because you don't have what somebody else has. I mean, think about it. Our favorite stories are some of these, are stories about these kind of people, right? Your favorite movie, your favorite novel, your favorite friend, your favorite, you know, story are the stories you like to tell, are about those people who don't have a lot going for them. At some stage in their lives, they decide to quit making excuses and they leverage what they do have for the benefit and for the sake of somebody else. Well, you know, we have somebody that's part of our family that leveraged what they had been given for the sake of others. There's a leader in our church, a woman that I love. Her name is Kara. And years ago, Kara came to us at Hoboken Grace and said, you know what, I have this burden in my heart for children in our city and in our community who aren't going to have a gift this Christmas. And she just felt like this is something that was so personal to her and something that she felt like she could do something about. So she came to us and she said, hey, I've started this thing. I'm calling it Hoboken Neighbors. I've got some pamphlets. I would love to invite people in our church family to adopt a family. And she started working with local organizations, finding children and families who were not going to have anything for Christmas. And she was able to partner with them. And that year, I don't know, maybe she changed like the lives of 40 people. One woman changed the life of 40 people. She was given one bag, and as a result, 40 people were forever changed. And who knows how that continued to compound interest. The following year, we approached her and we said, you know what? We would love to come alongside you. We would love to come alongside you and ensure that no child in our city would go without a gift. And because of her dream, because she didn't sit at home let somebody else take care of this problem. Because she didn't hide these gifts that she has in the ground. The Hoboken Christmas Exchange was born. The Hoboken Christmas Exchange to date has literally helped thousands of people ensure that they would have a gift this Christmas. And it leveraged what we already have. Other people in our family, generous people like you, who have adopted families, who adopted children, who adopted senior citizens, to ensure that they would have a gift this Christmas. It's one of my absolute favorite events. Brings a tear to my eye every single time. But because one person decided that they were going to leverage their bag for the good of others. I mean, you see this time and time again. The story of true mentors, the story of the open door, the story of hope and future. All of this was because individuals said, what am I going to do with what's been given to me? I'm not going to sit by and let other people do it. No, this is what's been given to me. And how do I leverage it for others? I'm sure you know two or three people in your life like that, who leverage everything because they've realized a couple things. Number one, everything we have comes from him. The servants received everything they had from the landowner. And we've said this in every parable, right? We've said this, that there's Jesus and then there's you. Well, if Jesus is the wealthy landowner who is promised to return, we don't know when the hour, he's coming back. But he's coming back, and when he comes back, just like it says in verse 19, right? It says in Matthew 25, verse 19, after a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled his accounts with them. Guess what? He's going to come back, and we are going to settle our accounts with him. So who are you going to be? Are you going to be the one that doubles what the master has given you, or are you going to be the one to simply hide it in the sand? We must have a response to our responsibility. That's why it's called responsibility. Everything we have was given to us by God. What are you going to do with it? Well, Anthony, how do I know what to do with it? He didn't leave me any instructions. Yes, he did. It's what we talk about every week. It's our mission here at Hoboken Grace to help people find their way back to God. We should know the way and the heart of Jesus so deeply that managing what he has given us should be second nature. We are to use everything we have to bring more and more people into this relationship with him. To hear the incredible message of Jesus Christ is not only a privilege, but it's also a responsibility, and we're going to be held accountable for what we do with that message. This parable is about faithfulness and responsibility and a warning against unfaithfulness. Jesus' intent with this parable was to call followers to be faithful in their obedience until his return. To the one who responds, more is given. To the one who does not respond, even what he or she has is loss. Listen, guys, knowing God comes with an added responsibility, and what he's given you, he's asked for you not to use for yourself, but for others. So the challenge for you and the challenge for me is decide, okay, how big is my pie? How big is my piece? And what can I do with it? What is the hand that I've been dealt? And to begin to realize that it's not ours, that God has said, you know what? Here's what you get to work with. It's not about even. You know, you're 28 years old. You're in Hoboken. You're single. You have an okay job. What are you going to do with that? You're 35. You thought you'd already be married with kids by now, but you're not. You're living in Jersey City. You have a network of friends, and you've got a pretty good job. What are you going to do with that? You've been married 3 or 4 years. You don't have kids, but you're dying to have kids, but you don't have kids right now. Okay, what are you going to do with that? Are you going to look around? Are you going to gripe and you're going to make excuses? Or are you going to accept what is coming from God, what is coming from the hands of your Father in heaven, and leverage it for the sake of something bigger than yourself? Because guess what? You are so important. And you matter. And you matter. But you are just not worth committing living your whole life for. That's just too small a thing. If we take the words of Jesus seriously, and you read the rest of the parables, and you believe that there is a God in heaven, and that Jesus is the Son, and you get to give an account for your life, and it can be in this awesome thing as depicted in the parable, or it can be that moment at the end of your life when you try to excuse yourself because of something you think God did to you and for someone else. We'll all have some time, but we're all going to be given uneven amounts, and we all have opportunities, but what we have is uneven. Yes, sometimes it's an unfair amount of opportunity, but what we're talking about today is our goal is to become an individual when we take responsibility for the opportunities that come our way. And I'm not going to take them for granted, and I'm not going to make excuses, and I'm not going to compare myself to the people around me, because the bottom line is simply this: to whom something is given, something is required. To whom something is given, regardless of how great, regardless of how small, something is required. And it's when we embrace that, and when we embrace it through the lens of who God is, this God who's cheering for us, who's empowered us, who's given us these opportunities, that we begin to be serious about taking full responsibility for our lives. I love the way the master responds in verse 23, right? He says, his master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness." That's what we get. Not only are we doing what God has called us to do, but as a result, we get to share in that happiness. He doesn't say that the master keeps it all from himself. He says that he brings them in with them and shares in his happiness. So let's take what's been given to us, use it for him, and use it for what he's brought into our lives. Will you pray with me? Father, first and foremost, we want to thank you for all that you've given us. And maybe today that's our first step. Our first step is merely thanking you for what you've been given us, and us realizing that, yeah, other people have been given different things, but that doesn't make us any less important. And what we have can be leveraged in incredible, incredible ways. My prayer is right now is for those who are listening that they will realize that what they have been given can be used. And it's not just monetarily. It is everything. We can leverage everything that we have been given for you and your kingdom. My prayer is that we will understand that. And that we will come to you today and we will say, "God, help me. Help me to decide. Help me to see what you've given me. What are these bags? What's in my bag of talents that you've given me so that I can leverage this for the sake of others?" That's our prayer today, God. And it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.